And then what I can do afterwards is I will send you the recording and also anybody else who hasn't been able to make it tonight. So what this is, this webinar is all about understanding the order in Return to Life of the 35 exercises, because after Joe had actually written Return to Life and had it published, the knee stretch was then added in. So we will talk about that when we get to it, because it might be a move that you're not used to or haven't really used a lot, because we don't initially put it in the mat work training. For me, understanding the order of the 34 is something we have to have. You're all contemporary Pilates trained, in that when, you know, we, the difference between classical and contemporary is that classical, I mean, or authentic, sometimes people want to call it, it means that you work within the order and you do not play with the order. You stay within that order and you teach the exercises in a certain way, at the full level. Now, obviously, depending on which of the elders you train with, they do have slightly different slants on it. But then sometimes people say that they aren't authentic. So Ramana is probably the one that most people say is authentic. And there are obviously lots of different opinions on the way that is taught. And we can always get into that on another webinar. But you could also, for example, I trained with Jay Grimes and did some training with Jay Grimes. And he has a very different slant than Ramana has, because Ramana took it as a dancer. Jay Grimes took it as a bloke. And obviously, at the end of the day, Joe created his method for men, really, you know, and so they have very different ways of teaching the 34. And yeah, I can talk about that another time. But one of the things I want you to think about is that I think as Pilates instructors, regardless of who trained you, you should know the order of the 34. And we should know, I feel quite passionate that we should know why that order's there, so that if we decide to change the order or modify the exercise, we never forget why we've decided to do that. And obviously when you first train, it can be quite difficult, because especially most of you have trained with me initially, and it means that during your level three, a lot of the time we're having to fit in AMP, we're having to fit in just the whole learning new teaching skills, we're having to think about the way we observe, the way we correct. So this is something that is very difficult to fit in that initial training, but it's something I'm very passionate about once you are out there teaching. So the thing that I want you to think about is Joe created his order for a reason. And those reasons are very specific and they are very valid reasons. And if I decide to teach in a classical way, depending on the understanding of the client, the order doesn't change, but what I might choose to do is omit an exercise. So classically, we have a certain order that we follow for beginners. We have another order that we follow as people begin to progress, and we have our final advanced order. And obviously it's a bit tricky because, you know, obviously this includes the reformer as well and additional pieces if and when they're needed. But one of the things I want to say to you is that when each of the moves has different layers, and I know I've spoken about this at other points, but I just want to reiterate it. When we're looking at the essential level of the movements, it's not a modified level. The 100 stays the 100, full 100, legs out, head up, arms beating. Okay, forget all the other modifications that we've added in. Just think of Joe's pure 100. And it's the understanding that the client has of that move that dictates where they are on their learning. In their learning, sorry. So for example, if I'm at an essential level of the 100, I'm learning the new movement patterns, okay? So I'm just beginning to get into the shape of the 100, okay? Finding that curve. I'm working very much on having a strong center and an alignment through the body in that shape. I work very much on the Trinity, okay, the inner thigh, the abdominals to the glutes that I spoke about before. And I'm looking at the points of stability. I have a big point of stability. So the moves that I choose when I am teaching a beginner level of the original 34 is that all the moves I choose have a very big point of stability. And we work generally on simple planes of movement in different positions. So generally we work on a sagittal plane. We work on the horizontal plane. We work, on the frontal plane. We work on the transverse plane. We try not to take it into too much of triplanar movement. And the two guiding principles of Pilates at that level of the move are centering and concentration. Then we move on further and we go into the progressive level, and that's when the understanding is and the technique is there of the essential level, and we move into understanding the two-way stretch and the fact that within the move we have oppositional force. So for example, your roll-up is in the repertoire of the beginner. Okay, so if I'm teaching the 34, it's in there for the beginner. Initially I look at being able to create the shape of the movement, so that lovely equal spinal flexion. I have a huge base of support with the legs being long along the floor, and I'm moving simply in the sagittal plane, okay? But then when I get to the progressive level, when they begin to understand a little bit more and they've been able to attain those first levels, I then look at the two-way stretch, that as my arms reach one way, my navel's reaching the other, and my heels are reaching in the same direction as the hands. So I create this two-way stretch of the fingertips and the heels and the navel pulling the other way. And it's that understanding. I look at axial elongation. The planes of movement begin to intertwine a little bit. And I'm looking more at control and precision. And then the final level is the more advanced level, when we take it into much more dynamic movement, when we have much more breath and fluidity, and the rhythm of the roll-up starts coming through. So it's not that we modify the movements, it's the understanding the client has of the movement that dictates where they are in their individual programming. So I just wanted to add that in so that you really can think as we go through the movements of points of stability, of two-way stretches, of the planes that we move in. And you'll see how Joe, in the 34, builds up your understanding of those three concepts, okay? So one thing I want you to think about is he spent a lot of his lifetime developing this sequence, this amazing in-depth sequence, which is full of amazing intention. And one thing I really want you to get from tonight is the respect that we should have for that. That if we do decide to change things, we do so with full knowledge. And as I say, it's always hard to teach you this when you first start teaching. And this can take a while to really understand. And sort of tonight, what I'm thinking is I won't get through the full 35 today. So I'm thinking we'll try and get halfway through, and then I'll sort of do part two next month. And we can keep discussing this, because it's really important to me that you understand what Joe's intentions and sequencing were and why it was there. So, you know, if you look at the 34, for example, swimming, the exercise swimming is about two-thirds of the way down. And it's two-thirds of the way down for a reason. So if you decide in your classes to start with the push-up and begin with swimming, you should have done so knowing why you're doing it and what you can expect people may not be able to do because you've introduced it initially instead of further down the sequence, if that makes sense. So I hope I'm making sense so far. Does anybody have any questions so far about what I've said? I'll just give you a moment to ask any. So if you want to unmute yourself, please do. Anybody asking anything? No, we all look quite good then. But please do ask anything if you need to, so that I can, answer any of your questions. So always in your mind, as we go through these moves, think about the points of stability. Think about the actual intention, and we're going to obviously think about the actual order as we go through this. So obviously, we start with the 100. Now, the reason that Joe started with the 100 is the whole point of the 34. It is he wanted us to return to life, which means he wanted to oxygenate. He wanted us to absorb oxygen, circulate oxygen, and completely bring ourselves back to life. All our organs, all our tissues, the blood flow, everything is about oxygenation. And that is one thing I want to take you to take with you when we finish tonight, is that if the client is not breathing well, then there is no point in them doing the exercise. I don't care if they breathe in here, breathe out there. Yes, that can be used to enhance the movement. And Joe more or less always wanted us to breathe in as we were expanding the body, breathe out as we were closing it in, because he saw the body as like a spring. But if a client isn't breathing, they've gone too far. You've got to stop them. You've got to bring them down. You've got to just make sure that above all, they breathe well and they breathe deeply. Doesn't matter if it's through the nose, out through the mouth, depending on who I've worked with. Some people have said, always breathe in and out through the nose because the mouth is for kissing. Other people have said, you breathe in through the nose, out through the mouth. It doesn't matter to me. The fact is that you breathe well. So we start with the 100, and we've got a first of all, it's all about getting the blood moving, getting our circulation going, getting the air moving through the body and flowing, and the oxygenation process beginning. So it's about big movement, it's about deep breaths, it's about full breaths. And it was called the 100 because Joe believed, and obviously that's breathing in for five. Breathing in for five, sorry, breathing out for five. He believed that the maximum you could do this well was for 10 breaths only. So he didn't mind if you did it for 20 breaths, okay? For 20, yeah, not for 20 breaths, but for up to 20 or up to 30 or up to 40. He didn't mind that. You'd never went over 100. So you only ever took those 10 breaths. So what for you, think about the quality of 2 breaths. And then stop the move. The quality maybe a couple of weeks later of taking 4 breaths and then stop the move. But it's about getting that blood flowing and getting that full deep breath. And if going back to what I said at the very beginning of the essential level, the progressive level, and the advanced level, if we're looking at it from the essential level, what I'm looking for is that strong center and the, sorry, oh, sorry, people are trying to get in. Is the strong center, and that you can see in your 100, if you picture your 100, if you've got the 100 in front of you can see that it has a very strong point of stability. Okay, it's got a really, really big point of stability, which is the torso. So you're working from a strong base, you've got a real focus on your center. So from an essential level, the 100 was always in there. Looking at it from a progressive level is when you begin to really look at enhancing the lengthening from the crown of the head out through the tailbone, out through the legs, finding that oppositional stretch through the body and the beating of the arms. And the arms, they counted the breath, they regulated your breathing. What they also did though was help the blood flow faster. And also what it did was it challenged your shape. So the other thing to think of with our movements is you always have a strong base of support and often a moving limb. So the arms would be that moving limb that looked at challenging your strong base of support and the trinity. So at any point, please stop me and ask me any questions that you may have, because I'm going to move on. So the next three moves, which are your roll up, your roll over, and your one leg circle, are the first stretches that we come to of the entire system. So those three are grouped together, and they are huge stretches, the first two for the back line of the body, and the one leg circle was more of a unilateral stretch. So in a way, this is probably going to play with your mind a little bit and give you some things to think of, because where before you may have thought, oh, you know, my roll up is all about finding good spinal articulation and, you know, finding my center and getting my C curve. Yes, it is. But Joe's intention was always much more in depth than that. He wasn't about the aesthetics. I mean, obviously he wanted you to look amazing, but he was so much deeper than just the aesthetics sort of importance that we give to Pilates now. Is so much deeper than that. Pilates really did work you from the inside out. So our roll up is where the point of stability are our legs. So we want those long legs strong into the floor. And then we moved the spine from that base of support of the legs. So one thing to think of is the bigger the base of support, the bigger the point of stability, the greater the potential for articulation. So this is why these moves are at the beginning of the repertoire, because they allowed you to have a very strong base of support in order to find amazing mobility and stretch. So your roll up was a stretch from the top of the head to the toes. Okay, you rolled up, moving first the top of the head and rounding up through towards the feet. And then the rollover is a reverse of that. You went from the toes to the top of the head. So you are lying out flat, and suddenly the point of stability now becomes the arms and the shoulders, and you are articulating the body around that. So you've suddenly changed, you've just got the reverse. Those two moves are mirrored. As I say, roll up, top of the head to the toes, roll over, toes to the top of the head. Okay, so they were the first two stretches that really opened up the back of the body. We then had our one leg circle, which took the stretch of the back of the body and changed it to being one side at a time. Okay, so suddenly we're working into moving into a unilateral side where we could really now enhance the stretch down that one side of the body, but you also added in a little bit of rotation. As the hip lifts and the leg comes across the midline, we're rotating slightly, obviously with huge control, and the points of stability here are the supporting leg, which is obviously lovely and long and straight, not bent if we can help it, the rib cage, the shoulders and the arms. So again, we've got actually a huge point of stability, but and so we're looking to get the articulation of the spine and the hip against that big point of stability. This move is also a stomach exercise in disguise, because if I can keep the rib cage stable, but the pelvis is moving against that, I've obviously got some very much deep oblique work, deep rotational work going on. So a lot of the time, the one leg circle is seen as a hip mobilizer, but actually it's not. It's so much more than that. It's a challenge to our stability. It's a one-sided stretch, and it's a stomach exercise in disguise. So any questions so far? Remember, please just unmute yourself if you've got any questions on that. Just while I'm waiting, I will just say also, when you're looking at the progressive level of one leg circle, what you're looking for there is the oppositional stretch that goes on from the supporting heel out through the crown of the head, and you're looking from the circling hip right up to the circling legs, toes, the toes of the circling leg. So you've got two oppositional stretches going on there that are really trying to create this sense of space through the body. We then come on to rolling back, and this exercise is a massage of the stretches that you've done. So we're looking at really just trying to encourage the breath once more to really go deep into the body. So when we're doing our rolling back, you're looking at staying very engaged through the arms. And if, when I say any of this tonight, you've got further questions on what I mean, We can always cover that. But as I'm holding my ball-like shape, I'm actually trying to pull the elbows apart slightly. So I'm really looking at my C curve, that shape. But I'm also looking at trying to open up my thoracics, that thoracic area. So, and that's why I breathe in as I roll back. So as I roll back and breathe in, I'm really encouraging the breath to come into the back of the rib cage and create more space around the back of the rib cage. And then I exhale and come back up. And the point of stability here is the shape of that you make of the spine. That shouldn't change. So suddenly you're challenging the shape with momentum. So if you think the first four moves have been a very strong point of stability, a very strong shape, now suddenly I'm challenging that shape by making myself move through it, as in with a bit of momentum. Rolling back is also the first sort of introduction to inversion in the repertoire. So it's the first time that Joe begins to introduce the concept of inversion, that you're taking the pelvis and the legs up above the head. So it's almost a little prep for when we come into our bicycle, our scissors, our shoulder bridge. You know, it's beginning to introduce that sense of inversion, our jackknife, our corkscrew. So I want to just pause there for a minute. And so what I want you to understand is that these first five exercises really are your preparation for the whole of what's to come. So when we decide as contemporary instructors that we want to play with the order, we want to put something before these, I want you to just consider the things that you've done already here. And I want you to make sure that in your prep phases, because in a way, these moves are Joe's prep phase. And he, you know, there's a very famous quote of him saying that if world leaders could do the first five exercises of my repertoire, we'd have world peace. And these moves really are your preparation. So when you do your preps, make sure that you are introducing the concepts that we find in these first five exercises before you go into anything else, because really we want to make sure we've covered these. We want to get the blood flowing, we want to get the oxygen going, we want to get the breath cooking, we want to have stretch through the back line of the body, we want to have added in a little bit of rotation, we want to be thinking of two-way stretches. So it's a lot really, if you when we begin to think about it, but it's also I find it brilliant. This is why I love planning so much. So moving on to the next two, the one leg stretch and our double leg stretch. A lot of you would know the stomach series, which I should talk about first of all. So often in Pilates classes, you will see the one leg stretch, the double leg stretch, the one leg straight stretch, the double leg straight stretch, and crisscross. And those moves, by the way, they can be called the stomach series. They're often called the five. You'll find them in the associates area in the daily fix. Okay, they're in there. So, you know, if you're not familiar with them, then go look there. Now, they were done by Romana. And they were, so Jay Grimes said that Romana never taught those in front of Joe. And she added them in, not the one leg stretch and the double leg stretch, they're from Joe Pilates, but the other three, she added them in simply because she saw people having saggy stomachs, okay? She thought they all needed a bit more tone in the abdominals. So she put those in. And they've sort of now been very much recognized as being part of the repertoire. But my thought is that they take away from the original intention that Joe meant when he had these first two exercises, the one leg stretch and the double leg stretch. He added these exercises in for the digestive system, okay? They were to help the body rid the body of toxins. They had nothing to do with giving yourself a flat stomach, okay? So in a way, and I shouldn't probably say this, I might get struck down by lightning, but Romana did, I think, a bit of an injustice in a way. Or it's been taken from what she did and sort of said, you know, that this is the stomach series. It's to give you a flat stomach. Whereas Joe actually wanted it so much deeper, so much more than just a fancy ab curl. He saw it being very much that it was Pilates working you from the inside out. So your one leg stretch is a massage for, well, both of them are both the one leg stretch and the double leg stretch are massages for the colon. Your one leg stretch is a massage for the ascending colon and the descending colon. So your colon is goes up, across and down. So if I pull my right leg into my chest for the one leg stretch, I massage my ascending colon, okay? As I switch legs and I draw my right leg in towards me, I'm massaging my descending colon. So it helps rid the body of toxins, it gets the digestive system working. And so when you're teaching the one leg stretch and the double leg stretch, if you're staying true to Joe's intentions, you need to get that knee onto your body, okay? So you have to be curled up in whatever support you need. You have to be pulling the knee in, try to almost get the forehead towards the knee or the knee towards the ear so that you really, really get into a tight shape so that you can get the thigh onto the body to give that massage into the colonic area. And then the double leg stretch where we draw both knees in is to really help massage the transverse colon, which goes across the body. So obviously as well, these exercises are strengthening for the trunk. The double leg stretch especially is a stretching out, a lengthening, and then trying to fold in completely. So your double leg stretch is almost, think of it, those of you that work with Reformer or any of the Cadillac One Chair, any of the equipment, it's really where your body becomes a spring. Just like on the equipment. And we inhale and we let the spring really expand so it fills with air. And then as we exhale, it's like a recoil. We come in and fold completely as tight as we can. So we breathe everything out in order that we can fully breathe in. So again, the double leg stretch especially is a breathing exercise as well. It's very much getting that full, that deep breath, in order to return to life and really get the oxygen flowing. We then move on to spine stretch. And spine stretch is where Joe has taken the stretch that you've had in other movements and he's brought it into seating. So it's our first seated movement, okay? And it's where, again, he's looking at stretching the back line of the body. And he's what we really need to do on this is focus on lengthening in both phases of the movement as we take the stretch down and into the spine and as we unroll and lift up through the spine. So again, your spine stretch is stretching out after the moves that we've done before, but just changing the position and bringing us into a seated position. Right, any questions so far? I need to hear if you've got any thoughts, because otherwise I feel as though I'm on my own and I've been talking for half an hour on my own. So any questions?
No, I'm good, Joe.
Oh, thank you, Louise. I mean, I know some of you have heard this before, so it's just nice to reinforce it though, isn't it?
Absolutely, going well.
Yeah, okay. Phew, good. Is this giving some of you some information? Some things to think of? Yeah? Oh.
Yes, it has for me, especially the order of what I do now.
Yeah. Yeah, Louise, because I think that sometimes we think about changing the order, and there's nothing wrong with what we do. Please don't think so. You know, because you know what I'm like. I love getting creative and everything. But in the back of my mind, I do always think, am I still, even though I play with stuff, do I still, you know, honour the intentions of that order? Does that make sense? So,
yes, definitely.
Yeah, so it's stuff like, you know, Joe always, the one thing I should add is that Joe always believed that standing was the position where your heart was under its most strain. So that's lying on your back was where your heart was under its least amount of strain. So again, if you're looking at the order of the exercises, you'll notice you are down on your back for a lot of the first bit. And then we come to the spine stretch, and it's the first time that he brings you up out of a lying position. And we'll see that. We'll see how he reduces the, you know, and brings us more and more upright as the 35 move through. So I will keep going. I'll keep going because I'm hoping to get to shoulder bridge tonight. So then after spine stretch, which... Oh, did somebody want to say something? Sorry. No? Okay. Let me know if you do. So spine stretch, when we, again, thinking about the point of stability, we've got very, you know, we've got the legs, again, the lower part of the trunk connected to the floor, giving us that really big point of stability in which to articulate the spine from. So... again, we've got a huge potential of movement through the moving part of the body. So then we come on to the open leg rocker, or the rocker with open legs. And it's still carrying on the thought of the roll up, the spine stretch. But what it's now doing, so it still requires that length through the whole of the back line of the body. But now what Joe's done is he's challenged it with balance and control. So he's taken that and he's just, Cecilia, sorry, I'm just going to mute you just because I think I'm getting a bit of feedback there, but unmute yourself if you want. So what it does is he's now taken, because if you think of the shape, one of the other ways of looking at the repertoire is there's only really one shape, and Joe just plays with that shape all the way through. So the shape of the open leg rocker is the shape of your spine stretch, is the shape of your double leg stretch, it's the shape of your part of your roll up, it's the shape, yeah, that we've already seen this shape a lot, but he's taken that shape and he's now added aspects of balance and control of whether you can still hold that shape as you move. So he's still continuing his theme of trying to lengthen the back line of the body. From open leg rocker, he then takes us into the corkscrew and the saw. Now the corkscrew and the saw, just like the roll up and the rollover, are the same move, except that the lower body part moves and then the upper body moves. So they're really very, very similar movements. So the corkscrew comes before the saw, and this is where the upper body is the point of stability and the legs move, whereas your saw, the legs are the point of stability and the upper body moves. But suddenly now in the corkscrew and the saw, we've got rotation. And also, we're stretching the sides of the body with that rotation. So rather than just bringing it into the back line of the body, Joe's now beginning to stretch the sides of the body. So it can be a little bit tricky to think of, because in a way, we think of the corkscrew as being, you know, quite a strong abdominal movement and so on. But I always want, this is why I'm quite keen on people not to always think of things as muscles. What strengthens which muscle, what stretches which muscle. Think more of the body as a whole and go a little bit deeper. You know, these two exercises are stretches for the back line of the body and the sides of the body as we rotate through them. So looking at those moves that we've covered so far, all of those movements are warming up the body, preparing it for what's to come, and stretching it out. So what could be really nice, which I know I've done with you before, but I might repeat again because it's been a while since we've done it, is you can modify all those moves, but keeping with the intention that Joe wanted, and you could have the 34 there, warming up the body, prepping it, ready for the movements that are to come, in that really traditional, original format that Joe wanted, which is just amazing. So anybody can do that. You know, any of our clients could stick to the 34, but we just need to modify it for modern day issues, I think. So really that, yes, go on, Louise.
Just So if I kind of like stuck to the original moves, prepped a few of them, but focused on, say, for example, rolling back.
Yeah.
And focus on that, but I could prep the first few beforehand.
Yeah.
I will still get his intention of doing the moves, but I'm just wanting to focus on one so they can... like my group can actually master that particular move.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I think, Louise, we've done it in an instructor only class, I will repeat it. But say, for example, if you think about the 100, you could do a modification of it where the upper body's supported, okay? Or as we were talking, Louise, you know, when we were talking about larger clients this week, you know, you could offer something for them to press against instead. But have the knees lifted, but focus on the breath. You could then, so you still do your 100, but you focus on the breath aspect. So you modify it as you see fit. You could then do the roll up. Make sure the legs are long. Don't have the knees bent. Get those legs long and just have them articulate to where they can. You could do the roll over. Give them a mini ball under the pelvis or a rolled up mat and let them lift to where they can. You could do the one leg circle with the knee bent, but still try and create that one-sided stretch. You could do rolling like a ball. Do you get what I mean? You could modify these, but always think of that intention. What did Joe want? So, you know, if, and focus on that rather than thinking, right, this, you know, this mobilize my spinal flexion, this does this, which is great as well. I just want to give you another layer and a deeper understanding, I think, of why Joe did it this way. So I hope that's helped. Has that helped, Louise?
Yes, 100%. I think the problem with me is that I actually didn't know what Joe's intention was.
Yeah.
For moves, and so definitely helping me.
Yeah, no, to, yeah. And that's fine. And the thing is, Louise, I think, you know, I know, you know, with my mat work, I think I do go through them, but not everybody does. And it does sometimes get lost at that point in your training because we're more concerned about getting you to teach and speak and correct and observe. And there's only so many layers of the Pilates chocolate cake you can eat at once. So all of those movements, all the way down to sore, are preparation for what's to come. So Joe then moved us on to some extension. So suddenly we have three extension moves. We have your swan dive, one leg kick, and double leg kick. So it's at this point that Joe introduces extension. Again, it's still the same shape. I'm still looking at a C curve, but it's where I'm beginning to extend. And what I want you to think about is something I would say, which I don't know if you'd agree with, is don't think of this just as spinal extension. You know full well how I feel about hip extension. So instead of thinking this as working the back of the body, think of it as opening the front of the body. And that can really help when, especially when we've got people who are a little unconfident in their backs. They think I've got a weak back. They think I've got a, you know, my back gives me pain, which most people do. Instead, take the emphasis off it being for the back of the body and think, actually, this is an amazing way to lengthen and open the front of the body. Okay. And actually, these two movements are very much preparation for the next move, which is, as I said at the beginning, I called it your knee stretch, and I do apologize, it should be your thigh stretch. So not only do these three moves suddenly open the front of the body, because Joe has been opening the back of the body so far, he now comes to opening the front of the body, but also very much finding strength in the bum and the back of the leg, so the whole back of the leg, back of the hip, ready for your thigh stretch. So your swan dive, your one leg kick, your double leg kick are preparations for thigh stretch, which I will talk about more at some point because I know that some of you aren't necessarily familiar with that because it's not in the original 34. It was added in after 1945. Your thigh stretch, strength, and actually there, it's there in the associates area. The beautiful Sarah Tandy teaches it with me as exercise of the month in the associates area. So you can look at it there if you want. And the thigh stretch is very much about strengthening the entire lower body. So Joe's definitely moving us through now. He's opened up the front of the body. He's opened up the sides of the body. He's opened up the back of the body. The whole time working on strength and getting us breathing more. And slowly, as you can see, he's changing the position that the body's been in. So we've been lying down on our back for a while. We've then come to seated. We're then lying on our front, and then we come to kneeling up in our thigh stretch. So now he takes us into neck pull. And for me, this is the most challenging exercise of the repertoire. It's probably the one exercise I should do every day, and it is a little bit of a nemesis for me. But actually, it's a lot of us struggle with neck pull because it requires so much strength. But actually, Joe had it here as a counter stretch for the previous four moves. So he had it here as a stretch for your swan, your single leg kick, your double leg kick, and your thigh stretch. You now did your neck pull to stretch out the back of the body after the work it's done in the four previous movements. It looks very much at the point of stability being the legs. Okay, but it very much strengthens them after the work they've done in the one leg kick and the double leg kick. But the difference is, instead of having the legs together, we now separate them in leg pull. So you no longer have the connection of the Trinity to give you stability. You've separated your Trinity into two halves for the neck pull, and that's why we take the legs apart. So any questions on those four moves and then the neck pull? Anything? No, are we good? So the next three movements are your scissors, your bicycle, and your shoulder bridge. And I think those of you, you've all trained with me, so you know that these movements are really about extension, extending the spine and extending the hip. And it's an advanced type of extension because you're coming into an inverted position. Suddenly, I don't have the support that I've had for my swan. I don't have the support that I've had in one leg kicks. I'm taking that support away. And I'm just resting on the elbows, on the arms, and across my shoulders. So Joe has taken your point of stability and made it so small. And then he's asking you to advance your extension in this position. So this is the entire front of the body getting a stretch. He's really, really looking for that length, the opposition from the base of the throat all the way out the body and out through the toes. He's looking to really develop and enhance that hip extension. And it's interesting because when we come to shoulder bridge, he really looks at giving you that just that little extra support in order to be able to take the leg, the gesturing leg, even lower to really find that stretch through that leg. Okay, so if you think about the shape of your shoulder bridge with the hands underneath the pelvis and so on, you can sort of see that these are your one leg kick and your double leg kicks reflected in scissors and bicycle. You know, he's looking for the same thing. He's looking for hip extension, he's looking for spinal extension, but he's taken away your base, that strong point of stability. So he's challenging you to find the movement against a much smaller base of support. The man was a bloody genius. So you can sort of see that, you can understand why, you know, classical instructors do get a little bit miffed when people play with the order, because he spent his lifetime creating this order. And one thing to remember is that Joe didn't create the moves. He didn't invent the 100. He didn't invent rolling back. These were movements that were already being done in German gymnastics. Benjamin Degenhardt had a lovely article, this was quite a few years ago, where he showed, you know, where you can see the moves in the gymnastic repertoire at that time in Germany. Joe also pulled from that very famous naked female doctor who loved to, you know, teach her clients and everybody was nude so she could see what people were doing. And yeah, you know, it's more than the movements, it's the order he put them in and an understanding of why he takes his time to get to push up. He doesn't put it at the beginning, he puts it at the end. So when you're thinking of planning your classes, if you do side bend, for example, quite close to the beginning of your class, I want you to be aware that you've got a very small point of stability. You've only got your hand and the foot, if you go onto that level, or, you know, the lower leg, in order to find that lateral flexion from the spine. So your side bend really should never be at the beginning or towards the middle of the class. It should be at the end, because you need to build the stability. You need to build the understanding of creating movement from smaller and smaller and smaller points of stability. You know, it's like swimming, for example. If we do the full level of swimming, I'm balanced on a very small base of support, just on my pelvis. So how can that be at the beginning of my class when I haven't opened up the front line, when I haven't strengthened and awoken the back of the hip and the back of my spine? So, yes. Any questions so far? Any thoughts on what I've said? What do we think now about planning classes?
It's a good reminder to go back to what we learned originally.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kirsten, because I think we can get carried away, you know, and in sort of like coming up with these brand new variations and these wonderful adaptations. And we think, oh, that will flow nicely into that one. I'll never forget one instructor who has been, you know, a highly experienced instructor, saying to me that she finds the 34 very clunky, you know, because it doesn't smoothly move me from my side to my front to my back. You know, he flips you. And I remember in my head thinking, and obviously I didn't say this to her, but I just thought, it shows that you don't understand Joe's intentions. Because if you think of it not just as a positional thing, but think of it as the actual intention of the movement, it flows beautifully because he takes us on a journey. And that's what I want you to think of. The journey that we do is from the beginning to the end. And it's one of the things to think of is Joe, it's not the challenge in the your hours class is not that you do the perfect 100, that you do the perfect roll up, that you look to try and do a very stable leg pull. The challenge is that you can start with the 100 and finish with a very challenging movement, such as boomerang, for example, but be able to execute the perfect boomerang at the end of a 50-minute class where you've worked really hard. And I think that's sometimes what we need to bear in mind, that this is an hour of what we hope is the best that people can do. It's not individual exercises that we try and do. It's the fact that I can complete the perfect push-up at the end of an hour when I've worked my arms, when I've worked my center, when I've worked my hips. Do you know what I mean? That's what we look for. And I think that sometimes that's where, I mean, I love Pilates Anytime. I think it's the most amazing resource. But what I do get, what I think is too easy, is for an instructor to go on watch somebody amazing like, I don't know, Tracy Mallett at the moment is very popular. You know, you look at her teaching her class, which has got lots of fluidity and flow, and it's wonderful. And I see instructors then just word for word repeat that class, but they don't add their understanding of, am I right to follow this by this? Tracy's done it, but it doesn't mean that that's right. She might have done it from the aesthetic point of view. She might have done it from whatever. I want you to almost, if you can and if you want to, think, is it Pilates or is it just a really great variation that's going to find a bit of burn in my bum? Does that make sense? And I'm not saying that looking for that is bad. I'm just, and there's a time and place for that. But what I'm saying is that it's also, I think, part of our responsibility to always honour the fact that we should be in our heads always trying to think, have I given enough preparation in order to get the in-depth intention of what that movement was really meant to be about? Does that make sense? Anybody?
I feel sorry for you, Joe, right now, but no, I understand. I'm 100% behind you.
Sometimes I need to push myself off my soapbox, I think. Pally, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, so I was just wanted to confirm. So if you do play around with the order,
yeah,
it has to stay true to the intentions. Is that what you're saying? But it is okay to play around with the order?
Yes. Yeah, it's absolutely... I am more than happy to play around with the order. But what I want you to consider is, for example, if you put side bend, maybe fifth move in, okay, are you really helping that client to achieve that movement? If we think, I mean, obviously I haven't spoken about side bend yet, because I'll do that in next month. But if you think about side bend, I'm supporting myself on one hand and should be one foot, but you know, we can modify it to a lower limb. So suddenly I've hardly got any points of stability. I'm looking to create a very big dynamic movement through the spine. I'm looking to create that lateral flexion. So what have I done before that movement to waken up and engage and, you know, get things moving in order to allow the client to succeed at that? Does that make sense, Pally?
Yeah, yeah. And just with Joe, would he have put in prep phases and kind of gone through essential phases,
no,
or did he just get you to do it? I mean, how did he work?
So if you look at, and now there are two thoughts on this, because for a long time it was said that Joe never taught the mat work. Okay, it was your homework. So it was given to you as your homework. So you would just arrive at his studio. You wouldn't be booked in for a time. You always had to commit to at least three times a week. And you would walk in and just start the reformer repertoire. Now, obviously, the order of reformer, I can talk about another night to those of you that are interested in that. But you would just start your work and you would work with the exercises that Joe or Clara had given you. So he wouldn't give you the full 34. You would be given the 100. And once you could do that well, you were given the next exercise. And you were given the next exercise. So this was your homework. Now, the black and white footage that we see at Jacob's Pillow was a promotional video that Joe did. Because what you've got to remember is the one thing he wanted was to be famous. He was an incredibly ruthless man. And all he cared about was his method and himself being famous and accepted by the medical world. So that's why you see pictures of Clara in a nurse's outfit. She wasn't a nurse, but she wore it to give them the kudos that they were medical.
Yeah.
So when he worked with Eve Gentry, who had a double mastectomy. She was a dancer and she had, you know, a very aggressive double mastectomy. And then he started training her, did the most amazing work. And there is actually footage that you can buy that shows her topless and him working through the exercises to help rehabilitate her. I've never seen it, but I do know it is available that you can buy, or it was available. She returned to dancing a year later. And so what happened was the medical professionals at the time were blown away by this. And they invited Joe to come and present and demonstrate his method and everything. But just before he went to do it, they found out that he didn't have any medical qualifications and cancelled it. And this absolutely destroyed him. He became very bitter. He became very angry. Because as I say, the one thing he wanted was to be famous. And that was why, if you look at the amount of black and white videos there is of him teaching and his books, I mean, I've got all three pieces of literature that he has written. So the Pilates pamphlet I have shown you, but I will bring it next time I see you so you can look at that as well. You know, he really wanted his method and himself to be out there. So when he didn't get there, it really, really affected him. So, you know, a lot of the black and white material you see, like the mat work being done at Jacob's Pillow, he didn't teach it like that. He taught it, that was just for promotional. But recently somebody has said that they were sure he taught a mat work class in New York, but I haven't heard anything else about that. So in a way, us teaching mat work, that's the other sort of axe that some people have to grind when they say that if you teach mat work, you're not a Pilates teacher, which is a load of rubbish, I think, and just ignore that. But, you know, because that's not how it was intended to be taught. It was your homework. But for me, Pally, mat work is the heart and soul. You know, Kathy Nash always says this. Mat work is the heart and soul of Pilates. All the other pieces, the reformer, the Cadillac, they are sister exercises that help you perform the mat. Because, and then what, it's almost like a wave. Think of it as a wave. So we start with Cadillac, reformer, at the beginning of the wave, helping you to do your mat work. Because mat work has nothing to push and pull against. You've only got your own body weight to work against. And there's nothing else to help you. So all the reformer work helps us do our mat work better. But then the advanced reformer repertoire takes your mat work and progresses it further. So when we come on to things like headstands, our back bends, and so on, our high bridges and so on the reformer, that's where your mat work is taken a stage further. So it's almost like an intertwining wave that we have, you know, that we work through. So everything he did was with a purpose. And I think we can play with that purpose, but I think we need to be honest with ourselves that I'm doing this for a reason. So for example, the class tomorrow night that I'm teaching, I am actually starting with 100-ish thing, but I'm, you know, because it's on the neck, it's going to be a bit more of a workshop. But, you know, you often think of my classes, I start in different ways, and I start with different themes because I can. But in my head, I am always thinking, should this move be here, or would it be better off towards the end of the class when I've taken the body through this journey that the 34 moves does. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I think I've been focusing so much on the flow of the class, but it was always in the back of the mind, like I was always wondering, why am I doing this?
And yeah.
That makes sense, why I need to do what I'm doing.
Yeah. So, and there's nothing wrong with working with the flow, but sometimes it can be, right, I face this wall and then I'm going to face this wall and then I'm going to face this wall, and that doesn't do anybody any favours. Do you know what I mean? I don't give a toss if I never end up facing the back of the room, you know, but it's that understanding, I think, of just, and you, as I say, Pally, you can play with it, but yeah, it's, what I really want is you feeling confident in knowing the 34, you know, so that nobody ever says, oh, you're not a real Pilates instructor, you don't stay by the 34. You can say, well, that's because, you know, my clients are sat at a desk all day. So potentially me starting them in a flexed position is actually not going to do them much good. I first of all need to get their spines moving a little bit more and their hips open, because then I can take them into a better roll up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, when we were when we were looking at the advanced moves, so that was one thing I wasn't sure how we could incorporate that. So, for example, we said in order to do a rollover, you need to be able to do a roll up. So then, how do the advanced moves fit into that?
Okay, so what you've got to think of is what I haven't covered is if I was to teach Joe's order to teach classically, say if I was to teach a classical mat class to my client, you don't put the rollover in at first. So what I was saying at the beginning, Pally, which I think you might have missed, is that when we teach the 34 to a beginner, we don't teach all the moves.
Okay,
so I mean, I can talk about this at another point another day, but for example, you know, classically my class plan is the 100, the roll up, the one leg circle, rolling, one leg stretch, double leg stretch, open leg rocker, saw, one leg kick, side kick, seal and push up. So that would be my classical order for a beginner. So I want you to notice that there's no shoulder bridge. Because if you think about the shoulder bridge, it's an incredibly complex move. I need hip extension, I need spinal extension, I need balance and I need control. And I'm doing it on a very small base of support. So for example, if I was classically trained, I wouldn't include the shoulder bridge with a beginner. You will notice that open leg rock is in there though, which could be surprising. But that's because I'm thinking of the shape of it and the opening of the back line. You'll notice swan dive isn't there. And that's because for my swan, I have to have a complete equality of curves through the spine. And my base of support is the shape of the body. It's tiny. Whereas what I have instead is my one leg kick, which you might see contemporary wise as being quite an advanced move. But from a classical point of view, it's not. So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I've gone through that very quickly and I don't mind doing a webinar on that in a few months' time, explaining to you what classically you would put in to a beginner class, what I call a progressive class, and your advanced class. Because again, it's more adding to your knowledge. You know, what you do is not wrong. It's just giving you another layer of the chocolate cake. You can tell I've got a chocolate muffin waiting for me in a moment that I baked earlier on today. The kids have all had theirs and I haven't had mine yet. So any other questions for the moment? Anything? What I'm going to do is I'm going to finish here for tonight. The second part, when we'll discuss the other moves, I will do in November. So you can listen to this and then we can pull together any questions. And obviously, I'll send out the recording. But it's really all about, I want you to look at the 34 that we've done so far and just see, it's almost simpler than what we try to do sometimes. You know, when we say, oh, this muscle's working, that muscle's working. He saw the body as a whole and he worked the body as such, very deeply, but completely. And one thing I'd say when you begin thinking of going down this route of a more original route, because I hate the word classical and I hate the word authentic, because I just think they're moves. Words, I mean, they're just a bit snotty. So I prefer the word sort of like original a bit more. But if you're thinking of Joe's original order and you know, using it more, it needs some thought. You know, you need to think of it. You need to make it your own. You do need to understand it. So I'm here to ask any questions and I will post other questions, and we can begin the next webinar answering some of those questions. But I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm going to be seeing some of you tomorrow night. for the neck. It's going to blow you away when I do what I'm going to do on your neck, I think. It might not do, so I might have set myself up for a bit of a fall there. But I look forward to seeing some of you. Obviously, I'll upload this recording and ask me any questions. If not, have a lovely rest of your Friday evening, and I'll either see you tomorrow or I'll see you soon, I hope.
Thanks, Jo.
Thank you. Thanks, bye. Jo. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.